And we now move to case number 4, Patton versus Keystone RV Company. Now, Mr. O'Leary, I have your name.
Good morning. Yes, I'm Mr. O'Leary. May it please the court, Ms. Patton respectfully urges the court to reverse the district court's grant of summary judgment based upon the evidence that she presented, including and particularly an affidavit from a key witness, the assistant plant manager, Glenn Miller. There is a factual issue that Mr. Ramey's conduct created a hostile work environment and that she was compelled to resign. Ms. Patton relies upon your decisions in Worth versus Tyler, Robinson versus Sappington, McPherson versus City of Waukegan, and Hostetler versus Quality Dining. What Mr. Ramey did to Ms. Patton in this case equaled or exceeded in severity the conduct at issue in each of those four cases.
Mr. O'Leary, could I ask you whether, no relation, I assume, Judge Miller had any problem with the Glenn Miller affidavit, or I assume that was presented to him in the summary judgment materials?
Judge,
he doesn't really discuss it in his order,
it's as if he didn't read it, because there are aspects of that testimony which are significant.
But it was properly presented to him. I just want to make sure there was no procedural slip-up in terms of getting it before him.
No, Judge. It was presented to him. And I'm going to come back to that in a moment, because one of the purposes of summary judgment is, at that phase of the case, the district court judge is to look at the evidence from our point of view. The evidence is to be considered from our point of view, and you have to look at all of the evidence. And, for example, Judge Miller summed up Glenn Miller's testimony about the stalking, the obsession, this disturbing daily siege that Mr. Ramey engaged in against this poor woman. He summed it up by saying, with 6 words in the fact section of his opinion, page 6 of the opinion, that entire account is summed up with, quote, "Ramey began to leer at her." And that's the closest the judge came to addressing this very disturbing evidence. Because there was no question that Mr. Ramey was a supervisor for purposes of Ellerth Farragher, and because Keystone was not claiming the affirmative defenses in Ellerth Farragher, the only issue that the district court had to decide was whether Mr. Ramey's conduct created a hostile work environment. Considering all of the circumstances, what do you do? Let's begin with the people involved. Look at Mr. Ramey and look at Ms. Patton. Look at Mr. Ramey's position of authority within the management structure and how he came to interact with Ms. Patton, a production worker whom Glenn Miller characterized as a, quote, "cleaning girl," close quote. I mean, the first red flag in this case, I think, has to be the obvious question is, what is a supervisor who is 2 levels below the president of the company, who manages 3 out of 7 factories, what is he doing approaching a cleaning person in the final finish department of this factory?
Well, there was some explanation of that, which you have disputed, but that they were concerned about production, and he was looking at the end product and was doing that with a number of employees, not just her.
They fought us on that. I concede that, Judge Kaney, but you have to look at the affidavit of Mr. Miller, which is an astounding piece of evidence when you consider what was at risk for him to come forward. You know, he admitted in that affidavit early on he was afraid to say anything. He was present when there was this off-colored comment. And he said in his affidavit, I was there. She complained to me, but I was afraid to step forward because I thought Mr. Ramey was going to fire me. He was firing people left and right. So he admitted cowardice. And then he eventually left the company, and he signed this affidavit. But again, at this stage, we have an explanation from Keystone, but that's not the point. The point is the evidence viewed from our side presents a very disturbing picture.
Could I ask you, Mr. O'Leary, just because time is short, about the distinction between the claim that Ms. Patton is raising with respect to sexual harassment and the constructive discharge claim? Because it's my understanding from Pennsylvania State Police against Suitors that constructive discharge establishes a higher bar. I mean, not every hostile environment is going to automatically mean that you can walk away from the situation. And with respect to the constructive discharge claim, the record suggests that maybe there were other reasons, or at least the company had no way of knowing that she was going to sort of leave.
The cases talk about how normally you have to stay in the fight and
right.
try to work out. And I can see that that is the case in the cases. But, Judge Woods, if you look at the totality of what this woman endured at the hands of this supervisor, a person who was called obsessed and disturbed by Mr. Miller, intimidating by Mr. Solis, and angry by Ms. Patton. If you look at what she had to endure on a daily basis, on two occasions, he entered the unit that she was working and touched her in a very intimate way. On every
Does
day.
Does the record show that this happened in the bedroom area of the RV?
I believe the record shows that one of the incidents did occur in the bedroom of the unit when she was squatting down and she was cleaning, I think, the carpet. And he snuck in, he put his arm around her in a grip, he put his hand up her neck, and he pressed his face to her ear and asked her out for a drink. In the other incident, he went into the unit as she was squatting down, and he stuck his hand, this was in the late summer, she was wearing shorts, he stuck his hand up her inner thigh far enough to come in contact with her underwear. And she fell backward to disengage his hand from her crotch area.
How long does she allege that this took place? Over how many days or weeks?
It appears to have happened over about a two-month stretch, September and October. Glenn Miller says every day he showed up and he spent an inordinate amount of time to be around her, and he says, I can't account for any business reason for doing that. And Keystone says in mitigation, well, he actually never came in contact with her genitals. And I think Keystone is missing the point on mitigation. It reminds me of, as we were driving over here this morning, I thought of the saying that Churchill said about his experiences in the Boer War. He said, there's nothing more exhilarating than to be shot at without effect. And the first time he attempted to touch her, and the second time he attempted to touch her, and then every day he's coming back every day and he's standing outside this unit and he's looking in and gawking at her, you can imagine what's going through this woman's mind. Is he going to come in today and touch me? And I cited in my brief her testimony in her deposition about how she felt just by seeing him and how this made her feel, how she felt threatened.
Now, in her deposition, again, I want to go to a procedural point because the district court judge was concerned about certain aspects of the affidavit. But does the deposition include her statements about the panic attacks?
Yes, Judge. I think
he doesn't exclude anything from the deposition, if I remember correctly. It's only the affidavit afterwards.
Right. Let me comment on that because we didn't take on the district judge on that issue. We didn't feel that was a fight that we had to take on because the affidavit really wasn't the cornerstone of our presentation of evidence. Her deposition was quite thorough. It was a very long deposition.
So this court can just look at the deposition and be done with it?
Yes, Judge. Judge, on my brief, page 9, I cited to two parts of her deposition about her feeling panic attacks when he touched her, but just the sight of the guy, she said, made her upset, made her feel nauseous and fearful. I started feeling my blood pressure go up and nervous and scared and thinking, okay, who's around me? I start planning if he decides to. Is this the moment he's going to come in and try to do something to hurt me or, you know? And she said something in her deposition which was kind of, in some ways, kind of sweet. She talked about her immediate supervisor, Joe Solis, calling her up every time Rainey left the building as if to ease her mind. She said, every time Rod Rainey left, he would tell Joe Solis that he was going, or Joe would find out from management up front, from Glenn Miller. But anyway, Joe always eased my mind. Quote, he's gone now. He's off the property, close quote. And I was like, thank God, you know, I don't have to watch my back so much.
Your time is up, counsel.
Thank you.
Johnson?
Yes, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is Jeff Johnson, and I represent Keystone RV in this case. The issue that's before this court, I think, is very simply stated, and that is whether or not the district court erred when, after in his application of the law, when considering the facts, whether or not that the appellant was subjected to a hostile working environment. I think the first analysis that is necessary in order to make that determination is whether or not the district court properly applied the law. Looking at the court's opinion and order, I think it's very clear that the judge has clearly set forth the proper analysis in this circuit, and frankly under most circuits, reviewing of the claims of Mrs. Patton for a hostile work environment under Title VII. So the next analysis is whether or not the facts as reviewed, all of the facts. There's no facts in issue, a question here.
Well,
whether or not the facts
I have a question for you, though, about the first of your points before you move on to the
yes.
facts.
Yes, Your Honor.
In the course, after he makes some general statements about the law of hostile work environment, on page 11 of his opinion, all of which seem quite straightforward to me, at the top of page 12, he turns to something that does give me some concern in light of the Supreme Court's decision in Harris against Forklift Systems about how much Mr. Ramey's conduct has to interfere with her ability to do her job. She testifies as the judge sets out, but she also, you know, suffers the panic attacks, feels physically ill. And in Harris, the Supreme Court basically said you don't have to be reduced to, you know, complete jelly before you've stated a claim. And I was concerned that the judge was assuming too much from that. Now, he then goes on and says, well, I'll just assume she found it subjectively hostile and turns to the objective events. But at that point, maybe we can turn to his facts. But I'm a little worried about the lens through which he's looking at this.
Well, Your Honor, that is one of the four factors that the court indicated are considered when looking at whether or not the facts support the claim and rise to the level of severe and pervasiveness.
Or pervasive
to create the hostile work environment. On the issue of panic attacks, on that issue, the problem that I think the court struggled with and ultimately did strike the affidavit, though the court refused to strike the deposition testimony that we...
Yeah, I'm happy to stick with the deposition. I mean... Well, it's not challenged here,
right.
Really, and so.
Right. And Your Honor, on that point, here's what in the deposition, since the court has focused in on the panic attacks, here's Ms. Patton's deposition testimony. If you would turn to her deposition, page 145, on direct examination, she was asked. You recall the facts. On November the 12th, 2002, she walked off the job after a dispute with a female co-worker who Ms. Patton was promoted over. Beginning on page 145 of her deposition, on direct examination, line one, she was asked, "Did you have a panic attack on that morning of November the 12th after you had an argument with Mary?" Mary was the co-worker that she had the argument with. She goes on to say, "Yes." Then the question, "Did you remember when you had your first panic attack at work?" Answer, "It really didn't start until I had a lot of upset episodes, you know, and it kind of built, you know. You get short of breath, and it almost was like when the incident happened with Mary, I was having a nervous breakdown, you know, because I was going through a lot of stress at work and at home. My daughter tried to kill herself on November 6th of that year, so I was dealing with that, you know, and still working, then going to the Oaklawn Center, where, you know, she was under 24-hour care at the hospital. And, you know, I hadn't gotten a lot of sleep and going through that with Rod and having to watch over my shoulder and, you know, the transfer and worrying what was going to happen. And I felt threatened when I got to Goshen that he was going to try and pin me somewhere and do something horrible to me. And that's when they really started, the panic attacks." Question. So, answer?
Well, yeah, no, we can see that. I guess my concern was really just was the district court giving her the right benefit of the doubt. And since he goes on and says he's willing to assume she found it subjectively hostile, we're only on the objective part of it. She's okay this far on the
sure.
harassment part of the case. You know, as I said, I think the constructive discharge, there's perhaps a somewhat different analysis that applies to that. And my concern about the district judge's opinion on the objective part is, frankly, his failure to take the Miller affidavit into account.
I don't think with all due respect, Your Honor, I'm not certain that the court should conclude that he didn't take the Miller affidavit into account.
Well, he doesn't say a
account.
Word about it. But the Miller affidavit says some pretty significant things.
Sure. But if you look at the five points that the judge took under consideration as indicated in his opinion, the fifth point was her allegations that she was being stalked. Now, he didn't address specifically what Glenn Miller said. He didn't address specifically everything she said. He didn't address specifically what her co-worker, her immediate supervisor, Joe Solis, said on that issue.
That's all a problem. I mean, I find it hard to believe that being touched in the way she said she was touched by Mr. Ramey is all in a day's work, frankly. Or, I mean, strikes me as quite out of line. And the stalking, if supported by the Miller affidavit, sounds like it's something that was pretty significant.
Well, the court did go on to hold that the actions and the totality of the circumstances of Mr. Ramey were boorish and inappropriate.
Well, that at least, but you know, obviously, we're in the light most favorable to her. Did it cross the line into an abusive working environment? And suddenly, he cites Suitors, which is actually the constructive discharge case. I don't know. I think looking at the record in the light most favorable to her, having somebody stalking you every day, pinning you down in the bedroom area of an RV, really?
He didn't pin her down, Your Honor. That's another problem we've been having with this case. There's nothing her testimony.
His mouth up to her ear and whispering something, even if that's not pinned down. Is that a workplace that somebody would want to be in?
To whisper to a fellow employee, "If you want to go out for a drink tonight, let me know." He didn't. He's not
place?
Citizen of the year.
Where did it take place, the whispering?
Inside a trailer.
In the bedroom area?
No. There's nothing in the record other than...
All right, inside the trailer. Was anybody else around?
I don't know, but what was her reaction to it?
And why did he have to whisper to her?
I don't... Your Honor, I don't know.
Well...
But how did she react to it? Her reaction to it was that she laughingly told Mr. Solis later that day, "Can you believe it? He asked me out for a drink." She didn't outwardly even appear to be threatened by that.
How about when he touched her leg?
When he touched her leg, she told Mr. Solis he touched me on the calf, and his response to that was, I saw it. I didn't think it was inappropriate. They're working together inside of a trailer, doing final finish.
But
was
her testimony
it appropriate?
That was not that it was on the calf. Her testimony was that it was up her pant leg.
There were two instances. The one that Solis witnessed was he touched her calf when they were working in a unit together. The other one was, if you read the sworn EEOC statement that she filed the day after, was he touched my thigh. It has morphed into.
Well,
now,
but her deposition is something that the district judge said he was looking
true.
At, so we can look at the
true.
Deposition too.
That is correct. That's okay. Correct. But, Your Honor, there are other, there are other cases from this. This court, where there have been touchings, inappropriate touchings, and the court has indicated that they were not appropriate, massaging of the shoulders for an extended period of time. You've got the Beltone case, where the president of the company prohibited the plaintiff from leaving, tried to grab her as she was leaving. You've got the
those are qualitatively different than what occurred here, though.
Right.
At least two and possibly three of these episodes of unwanted and inappropriate touching would qualify as sexual assaults under the criminal law. Seems to me that that falls on the McPherson side of the line.
Well, the district
which
court...
Which also involved conduct that qualified as sexual assaults under criminal law.
Right.
He did put his arm around her while she was bent over. Around her waist,
around her on her back, to lean down to ask her if she wanted to go for a drink. He never refused. He never asked her. You know, I mean, there's a lot of things he didn't do that these other cases, when they have found that there is qualitative, pervasive, and inappropriate, rising to the level of hostile environment. A lot of those didn't occur in this case. He never prevented her from, she never even alleged he was preventing her from leaving. He never asked her, although the complaint alleged, he never asked her for sexual favors or asked her for sex. The case, Judge, that you had with the president asked for sex on three different occasions. So he touched her calf, he touched her thigh, he touched her inner thigh. And he had his arm around her waist when he asked her for a drink. There was never any work-related incidents. She was promoted. The reason she got in the argument with her coworker down in Goshen was that the coworker was upset that she came in as her boss.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
Your time's expired. Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.